March 6th. Our reading in the Old Testament comes from the book of Numbers, chapter 6, verse 1, through chapter 7, verse 89. Now we'll read that in Moses' day, a personal vow was as binding as a written contract. It was one thing to say you would do something, but it was considered much more serious when you made a solemn vow to do it. God instituted the Nazirite vow for people who wanted to devote some time exclusively to serving Him. This vow could be taken for as little as 30 days or as long as a lifetime. It was voluntary with one exception. Parents could take the vow for their young children, making them Nazirites for life. The vow included three distinct restrictions. Number one, he must abstain from wine and fermented drink. Number two, the hair could not be cut, and the beard could not be shaved. Now, number three, touching a dead body was prohibited. Now, the purpose of the Nazirite vow was to raise up a group of leaders devoted completely to God. Samson, Samuel, and John the Baptist were probably Nazirites for life. Now, a blessing was one way of asking for God's divine favor to rest upon others. The ancient blessing in these verses we'll read here today in the Old Testament help us understand what a blessing was supposed to do. Its five parts conveyed hope that God would, number one, bless and protect them. Number two, smile on them, that is, be pleased. Number three, be gracious, that's merciful and compassionate. Number four, show His favor toward them, that is, give His approval. And number five, give peace. When you ask God to bless others or yourself, you're asking Him to do these five things. The blessing you offer will not only help the one receiving it, it will also demonstrate love, encourage others, and provide a model of caring for others. Well, after the tabernacle was set up, anointed, and consecrated, the leaders of the 12 tribes brought gifts and offerings for its use and maintenance. All of the people participated. It was everyone's tabernacle. Imagine hearing the very voice of God. Moses must have trembled at the sound. Yet we have God's words recorded for us in the Bible, and we should have no less reverence and awe for them. God sometimes spoke directly to His people to tell them, do it again. And we should have no less reverence and awe for them. God sometimes spoke directly to His people to tell them the proper way to live. The Bible records these conversations to give us insights into God's character. How tragic when we take these very words of God lightly. Well, like Moses, we have the privilege of talking to God, but God answers us differently through His written word and the guidance of the Holy Spirit. To receive this guidance, we need to seek to know God as Moses did. And with that, let's begin our reading today here in the Old Testament. March 6th, the Old Testament. Numbers chapter 6, verse 1, through chapter 7, verse 89. Then the Lord said to Moses, "Give the following instructions to the people of Israel. If any of the people, either men or women, take the special vow of a Nazirite, setting themselves apart to the Lord in a special way, they must give up wine and other alcoholic drinks. They must not use vinegar made from wine or from other alcoholic drinks. They must not drink fresh grape juice, and they must not eat grapes or raisins. As long as they are bound by their Nazirite vow, they are not allowed to eat or drink anything that comes from a grapevine, not even the grape seeds or skins. They must never cut their hair throughout the time of their vow, for they are holy and set apart to the Lord. Until the time of their vow has been fulfilled, they must let their hair grow long, and they must not go near a dead body during the entire period of their vow to the Lord. Even if the dead person is their own father, mother, brother, or sister, they must not defile themselves, for the hair on their head is the symbol of their separation to God. This requirement applies as long as they are set apart to the Lord. If someone falls dead beside them, the hair they have dedicated will be defiled. They must wait for 7 days and then shave their heads. Then they will be cleansed from their defilement. On the 8th day, they must bring 2 turtle doves or 2 young pigeons to the priest at the entrance of the tabernacle. The priest will offer one of the birds for a sin offering and the other for a burnt offering. In this way, he will purify them from the guilt they incurred through contact with the dead body. Then they must reaffirm their commitment and let their hair begin to grow again. The days of their vow that were completed before their defilement no longer count. They must rededicate themselves to the Lord as a Nazarite for the full term of their vow, and each must bring a one-year-old male lamb for a guilt offering. This is the ritual law for Nazarites. At the conclusion of their time of separation as Nazarites, they must each go to the entrance of the tabernacle and offer their sacrifices to the Lord, a one-year-old male lamb without defect for a burnt offering, a one-year-old female lamb without defect for a sin offering, a ram without defect for a peace offering, a basket of bread made without yeast, cakes of choice flour mixed with olive oil, and wafers spread with olive oil, along with their prescribed grain offerings and liquid offerings. The priest will present these offerings before the Lord, first the sin offering and the burnt offering, then the ram for a peace offering, along with a basket of bread made without yeast. The priest must also present the prescribed grain offering and liquid offering to the Lord. Then the Nazarites will shave their heads at the entrance of the tabernacle. They will take the hair that had been dedicated and place it on the fire beneath the peace offering sacrifice. After the Nazarite's head has been shaved, the priest will take for each of them the boiled shoulder of the ram, and he will take from the basket a cake and a wafer made without yeast. He will put them all into the Nazarite's hands. Then the priest will lift them up as a special offering before the Lord. These are the holy portions for the priest, along with the breast of the special offering and the thigh of the sacred offering that are lifted up before the Lord. After this ceremony, the Nazarites may again drink wine. This is the ritual law of the Nazarites, who vow to bring these offerings to the Lord. They may also bring additional offerings if they can afford it, and they must be careful to do whatever they vowed when they set themselves apart as Nazarites. Then the Lord said to Moses, "Tell Aaron and his sons to bless the people of Israel with this special blessing. May the Lord bless you and protect you. May the Lord smile on you and be gracious to you. May the Lord show you his favor and give you his peace. Whenever Aaron and his sons bless the people of Israel in my name, I myself will bless them." On the day Moses set up the tabernacle, he anointed it and set it apart as holy. He also anointed and set apart all its furnishings and the altar with its utensils. Then the leaders of Israel, the tribal leaders who had registered the troops, came and brought their offerings. Together they brought 6 large wagons and 12 oxen. There was a wagon for every 2 leaders and an ox for each leader. They presented these to the Lord in front of the tabernacle. Then the Lord said to Moses, "Receive their gifts and use these oxen and wagons for transporting the tabernacle. Distribute them among the Levites according to the work they have to do." So Moses took the wagons and oxen and presented them to the Levites. He gave 2 wagons and 4 oxen to the Gershonite division for their work, and he gave 4 wagons and 8 oxen to the Merarite division for their work. All their work was done under the leadership of Ithamar, son of Aaron the priest, but he gave none of the wagons or oxen to the Kohathite division, since they were required to carry the sacred objects of the tabernacle on their shoulders. The leaders also presented dedication gifts for the altar at the time it was anointed. They each placed their gifts before the altar. The Lord said to Moses, "Let one leader bring his gift each day for the dedication of the altar." On the first day, Nashon, son of Amminadab, leader of the tribe of Judah, presented his offering. His offering consisted of a silver platter weighing 3.25 pounds and a silver basin weighing 1.75 pounds, as measured by the weight of the sanctuary shekel. These were both filled with grain offerings of choice flour moistened with olive oil. He also brought a gold container weighing 4 ounces, which was filled with incense. He brought a young bull, a ram, and a 1-year-old male lamb for a burnt offering, and a male goat for a sin offering. For a peace offering, he brought 2 bulls, 5 rams, 5 male goats, and 5 1-year-old male lambs. This was the offering brought by Nashon, son of Amminadab. On the second day, Nathanael, son of Zuar, leader of the tribe of Issachar, presented his offering. His offering consisted of a silver platter weighing 3.25 pounds and a silver basin weighing 1.75 pounds, as measured by the weight of the sanctuary shekel. These were both filled with grain offerings of choice flour moistened with olive oil. He also brought a gold container weighing 4 ounces, which was filled with incense. He brought a young bull, a ram, and a one-year-old male lamb for a burnt offering, and a male goat for a sin offering. For a peace offering, he brought 2 bulls, 5 rams, 5 male goats, and 5 one-year-old male lambs. This was the offering brought by Nathanael, son of Zuar. On the third day, Eliab, son of Helon, leader of the tribe of Zebulun, presented his offering. His offering consisted of a silver platter weighing 3.25 pounds and a silver basin weighing 1.75 pounds, as measured by the weight of the sanctuary shekel. These were both filled with grain offerings of choice flour moistened with olive oil. He also brought a gold container weighing 4 ounces, which was filled with incense. He brought a young bull, a ram, and a one-year-old male lamb for a burnt offering, and a male goat for a sin offering. For a peace offering, he brought 2 bulls, 5 rams, 5 male goats, and 5 one-year-old male lambs. This was the offering brought by Eliab, son of Helon. On the fourth day, Elizur, son of Shedeur, leader of the tribe of Reuben, presented his offering. His offering consisted of a silver platter weighing 3.25 pounds and a silver basin weighing 1.75 pounds, as measured by the weight of the sanctuary shekel. These were both filled with grain offerings of choice flour moistened with olive oil. He also brought a gold container weighing 4 ounces, which was filled with incense. He brought a young bull, a ram, and a one-year-old male lamb for a burnt offering, and a male goat for a sin offering. For a peace offering, he brought 2 bulls, 5 rams, 5 male goats, and 5 one-year-old male lambs. This was the offering brought by Elizur, son of Shedeur. On the fifth day, Shelumiel, son of Zurishaddai, leader of the tribe of Simeon, presented his offering. His offering consisted of a silver platter weighing 3.25 pounds and a silver basin weighing 1.75 pounds, as measured by the weight of the sanctuary shekel. These were both filled with grain offerings of choice flour moistened with olive oil. He also brought a gold container weighing 4 ounces, which was filled with incense. He brought a young bull, a ram, and a one-year-old male lamb for a burnt offering, and a male goat for a sin offering. For a peace offering, he brought 2 bulls, 5 rams, 5 male goats, and 5 one-year-old male lambs. This was the offering brought by Shelumiel, son of Zurishaddai. On the sixth day, Eliasaph, son of Deuel, leader of the tribe of Gad, presented his offering. His offering consisted of a silver platter weighing 3.25 pounds and a silver basin weighing 1.75 pounds, as measured by the weight of the sanctuary shekel. These were both filled with grain offerings of choice flour moistened with olive oil. He also brought a gold container weighing 4 ounces, which was filled with incense. He brought a young bull, a ram, and a one-year-old male lamb for a burnt offering, and a male goat for a sin offering. For a peace offering, he brought 2 bulls, 5 rams, 5 male goats, and 5 one-year-old male lambs. This was the offering brought by Eliasaph, son of Deuel. On the seventh day, Elishama, son of Ammihud, leader of the tribe of Ephraim, presented his offering. His offering consisted of a silver platter weighing 3.25 pounds and a silver basin weighing 1.75 pounds, as measured by the weight of the sanctuary shekel. These were both filled with grain offerings of choice flour moistened with olive oil. He also brought a gold container weighing 4 ounces, which was filled with incense. He brought a young bull, a ram, and a one-year-old male lamb for a burnt offering, and a male goat for a sin offering. For a peace offering, he brought 2 bulls, 5 rams, 5 male goats, and 5 one-year-old male lambs. This was the offering brought by Elishama, son of Ammihud. On the eighth day, Gamaliel, son of Pedazur, leader of the tribe of Manasseh, presented his offering. His offering consisted of a silver platter weighing 3.25 pounds and a silver basin weighing 1.75 pounds, as measured by the weight of the sanctuary shekel. These were both filled with grain offerings of choice flour, moistened with olive oil. He also brought a gold container weighing 4 ounces, which was filled with incense. He brought a young bull, a ram, and a one-year-old male lamb for a burnt offering, and a male goat for a sin offering. For a peace offering, he brought 2 bulls, 5 rams, 5 male goats, and 5 one-year-old male lambs. This was the offering brought by Gamaliel, son of Pedazur. On the ninth day, Abidan, son of Gideoni, leader of the tribe of Benjamin, presented his offering. His offering consisted of a silver platter weighing 3.25 pounds and a silver basin weighing 1.75 pounds, as measured by the weight of the sanctuary shekel. These were both filled with grain offerings of choice flour moistened with olive oil. He also brought a gold container weighing 4 ounces, which was filled with incense. He brought a young bull, a ram, and a one-year-old male lamb for a burnt offering, and a male goat for a sin offering. For a peace offering, he brought 2 bulls, 5 rams, 5 male goats, and 5 one-year-old male lambs. This was the offering brought by Abidan, son of Gideoni. On the 10th day, Ahiezer, son of Amashadai, leader of the tribe of Dan, presented his offering. His offering consisted of a silver platter weighing 3 1/4 pounds and a silver basin weighing 1 3/4 pounds as measured by the weight of the sanctuary shekel. These were both filled with grain offerings of choice flour moistened with olive oil. He also brought a gold container weighing 4 ounces, which was filled with incense. He brought a young bull, a ram, and a 1-year-old male lamb for a burnt offering, and a male goat for a sin offering. For a peace offering, he brought 2 bulls, 5 rams, 5 male goats, and 5 1-year-old male lambs. This was the offering brought by Ahiezer, son of Amminadab. On the 11th day, Pagiel, son of Ochran, leader of the tribe of Asher, presented his offering. His offering consisted of a silver platter weighing 3 1/4 pounds and a silver basin weighing 1 3/4 pounds as measured by the weight of the sanctuary shekel. These were both filled with grain offerings of choice flour moistened with olive oil. He also brought a gold container weighing 4 ounces, which was filled with incense. He brought a young bull, a ram, and a 1-year-old male lamb for a burnt offering, and a male goat for a sin offering. For a peace offering, he brought 2 bulls, 5 rams, 5 male goats, and 5 1-year-old male lambs. This was the offering brought by Pagiel, son of Ochran. On the 12th day, Ahira, son of Enan, leader of the tribe of Naphtali, presented his offering. His offering consisted of a silver platter weighing 3 1/4 pounds and a silver basin weighing 1 3/4 pounds, as measured by the weight of the sanctuary shekel. These were both filled with grain offerings of choice flour moistened with olive oil. He also brought a gold container weighing 4 ounces, which was filled with incense. He brought a young bull, a ram, and a 1-year-old male lamb for a burnt offering, and a male goat for a sin offering. For a peace offering, he brought 2 bulls, 5 rams, 5 male goats, and 5 1-year-old male lambs. This was the offering brought by Ahira, son of Enan. So this was the dedication offering brought by the leaders of Israel at the time the altar was anointed. 12 silver platters, 12 silver basins, and 12 gold incense containers. Each silver platter weighed 3 1/4 pounds, and each silver basin weighed 1 3/4 pounds. The total weight of the silver was 60 pounds, as measured by the weight of the sanctuary shekel. Each of the 12 gold containers that was filled with incense weighed 4 ounces, as measured by the weight of the sanctuary shekel. The total weight of the gold was 3 pounds. 12 young bulls, 12 rams, and 12 1-year-old male lambs were donated for the burnt offerings, along with their prescribed grain offerings. 12 male goats were brought for the sin offering. 24 bulls, 60 rams, 60 male goats, and 60 1-year-old male lambs were donated for the peace offerings. This was the dedication offering for the altar after it was anointed. Whenever Moses went into the tabernacle to speak with the Lord, he heard the voice speaking to him from between the 2 cherubim above the ark's cover, the place of atonement that rests on the ark of the covenant. The Lord spoke to him from there. And now, as we turn our attention to the reading of the New Testament, our narrative comes from the book of Mark, chapter 12, verse 38, through chapter 13, verse 13. Here's a brief commentary to help shed some light on some of the things we'll be reading here in the New Testament. Well, Jesus again exposed the religious leaders' impure motives. The teachers received no pay, so they depended on the hospitality extended by devout Jews. Some of them used this custom to exploit people, cheating the poor out of everything they had and taking advantage of the rich. Through their pious actions, they hoped to gain status, recognition, and respect. Now, Jesus warned against trying to make a good impression. These teachers of religious law were religious hypocrites who really had no love for God, no devotion to the Lord. True followers of Christ are not distinguished by showing spirituality. Reading the Bible, praying in public, or following church rituals can be phony if the motive for doing them is to be noticed or to receive honor. Let your actions be consistent with your beliefs. Live for Christ, even when no one is looking. Well, there were several boxes in the temple where money could be placed. Some were for collecting the temple tax from Jewish males. The others were for free will offerings. This particular collection box that Jesus refers to here in the scripture today was probably in the court of the women. Now we'll read that this widow gave all she had to live on, in contrast to the way most people handle their money. When we consider giving a certain percentage of our income a great accomplishment, we resemble those who gave a tiny part of their surplus, quoting Jesus there. Here, Jesus was admiring generous and sacrificial giving. As believers, we should consider increasing our giving, whether of money, time, or talents, to a point beyond convenience or calculation. Well, about 15 years before Jesus was born, that's 20 BC, Herod the Great began to remodel and rebuild the temple, which had stood for nearly 500 years since the days of Ezra. Herod made the temple one of the most beautiful buildings in Jerusalem, not to honor God, but to appease the Jews whom he ruled. The magnificent building project was not completely finished until the year AD 64. Jesus' prophecy that not one stone would be left on another was fulfilled in AD 70 when the Romans completely destroyed the temple and the entire city of Jerusalem. Now the disciples wanted to know when the temple would be destroyed. Jesus gave them a prophetic picture of that time, including events leading up to it. He also talked about future events connected with his return to earth to judge all people. Jesus predicted both near and distant events without putting them in chronological order. Some of the disciples lived to see the destruction of Jerusalem. Jesus warned his followers about the future so that they could learn how to live in the present. And then we'll read here today in the New Testament where Jesus is sitting on the Mount of Olives overlooking the city. The Mount of Olives rises above Jerusalem to the east. From its slopes, a person can look down into the city and see the temple. Zechariah chapter 14 predicts that the Messiah will stand on this very mountain when he returns to set up his eternal kingdom. To believe in Jesus and endure to the end will take perseverance because our faith will be challenged and opposed. Severe trials will sift true Christians from fair-weather believers. Enduring to the end does not earn salvation for us, but marks us as already saved. The assurance of our salvation will keep us strong in times of persecution. All right, let's begin our reading today here in the New Testament. March 6th, the New Testament. Mark chapter 12, verse 38 through chapter 13, verse 13. Jesus also taught, "Beware of these teachers of religious law, for they like to parade around in flowing robes and receive respectful greetings as they walk in the marketplaces. And how they love the seats of honor in the synagogues and the head table at banquets. Yet they shamelessly cheat widows out of their property and then pretend to be pious by making long prayers in public. Because of this, they will be more severely punished." Jesus sat down near the collection box in the temple and watched as the crowds dropped in their money. Many rich people put in large amounts. Then a poor widow came and dropped in two small coins. Jesus called his disciples to him and said, "I tell you the truth, this poor widow has given more than all the others who are making contributions. For they gave a tiny part of their surplus, but she, poor as she is, has given everything she had to live on." As Jesus was leaving the temple that day, one of his disciples said, "Teacher, look at these magnificent buildings. Look at the impressive stones in the walls." Jesus replied, "Yes, look at these great buildings, but they will be completely demolished. Not one stone will be left on top of another." Later, Jesus sat on the Mount of Olives, across the valley from the temple. Peter, James, John, and Andrew came to him privately and asked him, "Tell us, when will all this happen? What sign will show us that these things are about to be fulfilled?" Jesus replied, "Don't let anyone mislead you. For many will come in my name, claiming, 'I am the Messiah.' They will deceive many. And you will hear of wars and threats of wars, but don't panic. Yes, these things must take place, but the end won't follow immediately. Nation will go to war against nation, and kingdom against kingdom. There will be earthquakes in many parts of the world, as well as famines. But this is only the first of the birth pains, with more to come. When these things begin to happen, watch out. You will be handed over to the local councils and beaten in the synagogues. You will stand trial before governors and kings because you are my followers. But this will be your opportunity to tell them about me. for the good news must first be preached to all nations. But when you are arrested and stand trial, don't worry in advance about what to say. Just say what God tells you at that time, for it is not you who will be speaking, but the Holy Spirit. A brother will betray his brother to death. A father will betray his own child. And children will rebel against their parents and cause them to be killed. And everyone will hate you because you are my followers. But the one who endures to the end will be saved. Psalm 49, verses 1 through 20. The futility of worldliness, riches, pride, fame, resounds from this psalm. Comparable in form to the book of Ecclesiastes, this psalm is one of the few written more to instruct than to praise God. Now, in the slave market of the ancient world, a slave had to be redeemed. In other words, someone had to pay the price in order to go free. In Mark chapter 10, Ephesians 1, and Hebrews 9, we learn that Jesus paid such a price so that we could be set free from slavery to sin in order to begin a new life with Him. See, there's no way for a person to buy eternal life with God. Only God can redeem a soul. So don't count on wealth and physical comforts to keep you happy, because you will never have enough wealth to keep from dying. The rich and poor have one similarity. When they die, they leave all they own here on earth. At the moment of death, and by the way, all of us will face that moment, both rich and poor are naked and empty-handed before God. The only riches we have at that time are those we've already invested in our eternal heritage. At the time of death, each of us will wish we had invested less on earth, where we must leave it, and more in heaven, where we will retain it forever. To have treasure in heaven, we must place our faith in God, pledge ourselves to obey Him, and utilize our resources for the good of His kingdom. Now, this is a good time to check up on your investments and see where you have invested the most. Then do whatever it takes to place your investments where they really count. Psalm 49, verses 1 through 20. For the choir director, a psalm of the descendants of Korah. Listen to this, all you people. Pay attention, everyone in the world. High and low, rich and poor, listen. For my words are wise, and my thoughts are filled with insight. I listen carefully to many proverbs, and solve riddles with inspiration from a harp. Why should I fear when trouble comes, when enemies surround me? They trust in their wealth and boast of great riches. Yet they cannot redeem themselves from death by paying a ransom to God. Redemption does not come so easily, for no one can ever pay enough to live forever and never see the grave. Those who are wise must finally die, just like the foolish and senseless, leaving all their wealth behind. The grave is their eternal home, where they will stay forever. They may name their estates after themselves, but their fame will not last. They will die just like animals. This is the fate of fools, though they are remembered as being wise. Interlude. Like sheep, they are led to the grave, where death will be their shepherd. In the morning, the godly will rule over them. Their bodies will rot in the grave, far from their grand estates. But as for me, God will redeem my life. He will snatch me from the power of the grave. Interlude. So don't be dismayed when the wicked grow rich and their homes become ever more splendid. For when they die, they take nothing with them. Their wealth will not follow them into the grave. In this life, they consider themselves fortunate and are applauded for their success. But they will die like all before them and never again see the light of day. People who boast of their wealth don't understand. They will die just like the animals. Proverbs chapter 10, verses 27 and 28. Fear of the Lord lengthens one's life, but the years of the wicked are cut short. The hopes of the godly result in happiness, but the expectations of the wicked come to nothing.